Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is July 28th, 2006. Our session today is titled With You in Your Adoption. Our presenter is Dan Erlander. Session number ERD 2006-5. Let's listen in.
Begin the recording. This is Dan Erlander, and this is the fifth of our sessions on baptism. And today we're going to look at baptism as adoption. So welcome everyone. Now, if someone now would look up these, someone, Ephesians 1, 3 to 5. One, okay, and then John 1, 12 and 13. And then Romans 8, 14 to 17. Okay, Romans 8. And then just look it up and be ready to read it. Rebecca Wee is here to read a beautiful poem on water. And that will be our meditation to begin. Because part of our focus today is how precious, precious water really is, and also all of the spiritual meaning of water. So let's begin, and let's get ourselves relaxed and our ears ready for this beautiful poem called The Rain by Robert Creeley. So we'll have a moment of silence and then
The Rain. All night the sound had come back again, and again falls this quiet, persistent rain. What am I to myself that must be remembered, insisted upon so often? Is it that never the ease, even the hardness of rain falling, will have for me something other than this, something not so insistent? Am I to be locked in this final uneasiness? Love, if you love me, lie next to me. Be for me like rain, the getting out of the tiredness, the fatuousness, the semi-lust of intentional indifference. Be wet with a decent happiness.
So thank you. I love the line, be wet. Is that what it is?
Yep.
Be wet. Over the years, we've developed this theme, live wet, which is a very, very short way of saying live your baptism. And this is be, what do you think it means by be wet?
Lots of different things. But I like it too, because the idea that, I mean, think about when it rains, how we try to stay out of it. You know, you got to put on your raincoat and put up the umbrella and run from your car. And mm-hmm. So this idea of just be wet with a decent happiness. It's so lovely.
Yeah. Remember the times when it was okay to go out in the rain and it's just pouring and you say, I don't care if I get all wet, and just go out and hold up your arms and give thanks. And this is it's a reminder of how precious rain is. Are there any inspirations before we begin? Water.
Along with what you just said, I always recommend that everyone, if you have a chance to ever wash your hair in the rain, in a downpour, how many have done it? It's the best. It feels good for days afterwards when it's raining hard enough that you just go outside and lather up standing there and let it rinse it out. There's nothing like it. So. Before you die.
I've never thought of
it.
Do you take shampoo?
It has to be a hard rain, but it feels really good.
The preciousness of water, just to bring this out, that a prediction is that in the coming years, the wars on this earth, and we say, may God forbid, but the wars on this earth will not be over oil, but they will be over water. And one of the most dangerous things that is happening right now in terms of water that I think we need to be concerned about is a privatization of water. And we don't, the news here doesn't report, so we don't hear about this, is the massive demonstrations there have been in communities around the world, often in South America, over water being turned over to private corporations, the prices going up, so the poorest can't afford the water, and therefore they must go to unclean water for their water. And this is a tragic situation, and theologically, it means that we are deciding that water is not God's gift for everyone and every living being. But water becomes another commodity that certain people can control. And that's why some of these websites, I think if we take baptism seriously, it leads us to the water, and then to ask the questions. And then together as Christians all over the world, I know Noah did when it came to infant formula, and then also the tobacco, is now to be there in terms of this issue of water. This is kind of a, well, I'll just say it. Do you see what this is? One thing the InFact group does is they test water from normal drinking sources and test it in its purity against bottled water. And anybody want to guess what the conclusion is? They also have, unless you're in some places, but they also stand out on the street corners with taste tests. They have to guess which is the bottled water and which is the city water. Well, I won't go on. I can really start preaching here. Part of this was getting into baptism, kind of. I don't know why. But it takes more water to produce this bottle than the water that is in it. And also, this is Coca-Cola, Pepsi-Cola, others that are beginning. This is a beginning, I think, to getting us accustomed to privatization of water. So anybody have any doubts about where I stand on this issue? This I picked up about a year ago at a church. And it's amazing how the church water in the faucet is just fine. Remember the old days when we put pitchers with ice at meetings?
Yeah.
Everything. Now you have hundreds of these. Uh-huh. And then, I got to quit. And then I started by refilling these things, but then found out the plastic isn't that good for the water. For later, so okay. Anybody have any questions about that? What side I'm on?
Just two short things. The first is, in response to your bottle of water, I have my students over who are seniors in college for a potluck at the end of the semester, and they bring beverages and so forth. And one student said, "Do you have any water?" And I said, "Oh yeah, we've got good water right there." And I pointed to the faucet, and she said, "No, I mean real water." The other thing is that thinking about the being wet idea, in the Ojibwe pipe ceremonies, they use water as one of their sacred elements, but they pass it around, and it's cold and clean wet on the inside, but as becoming part of me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What percentage of us are water? Or a me?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, it's big.
90%.
In Moulton, we have water that sometimes is brown when we turn on the faucet. Mm-hmm. So we put a pure filter on the faucet in the kitchen, yeah, so that at least we know that water will come out clear.
Yeah, that's approved.
Glad to hear it.
Advertisement for what is it, Breda?
But you know, when you don't know what color the water is going to be, it, our community is very small, 900 people, and you just can't trust it.
So, good. Well, thank you, Becca, for bringing that. And then I want to start today with the theme of adoption, and then spend most of our time responding to or hearing two stories, rather long stories. But let's begin with the verses on adoption. The first one being Ephesians 1, 3 to 5. That baptism, back to the earliest church, was used the metaphor of parents adopting a child into their family. And in the Roman Empire, it was very, very clear that an adopted child was as valid as a natural born child. And an adopted child received the same inheritance and was considered son and daughter, no questions asked if you were adopted. So let's, with that as a background, let's read first the Ephesians.
Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who has blessed us in Christ with every spiritual blessing in the heavenly places, just as he chose us in Christ before the foundation of the world to be holy and blameless before him in love. He destined us for adoption as his children through Jesus Christ, according to the good pleasure of his will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's destined for adoption. Then the John passage, John 1:12 and 13.
Yet to all who received him, to those who believe in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, children born not of natural descent, nor of human decision or a husband's will, but born of God.
What's the first phrase again? The first...
the first... Get to all who received him.
Yeah, he gave the power to become children of God, not to kind of hope you're a child of God, or not, but to the guarantee, isn't it? You are a child of God. Now, Romans 8.
Because those who are led by the Spirit of God are sons of God. For you did not receive a spirit that makes you a slave again to fear, but you received the spirit of sonship, and by him we cry, Abba, Father. The Spirit himself testifies with our spirit that we are God's children. Now if we are children, then we are heirs, heirs of God and co-heirs with Christ, if indeed we share in his sufferings, in order that we may also share in his glory.
Mm-hmm. And this, was there more? Okay, this is, again, the context of the Roman Empire, where who inherits was extremely important, who inherits. And just as in the Roman Empire, if you were an adopted child, you were fully, fully guaranteed the same inheritance as if you were a natural child. And so this metaphor is used that God has adopted us and we are heirs to all of the gifts and all of the promises. And so those are some Bible backgrounds for today. And then...
Dan? One of the things that is hard for us to understand is that our law is about individuals, mostly.
Mm-hmm.
that's a really recent phenomenon. Most laws about organizations.
Yeah.
And so rights adhere to families rather than people.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a right before the law as the head of a household, then not as a person. So that much of Roman organization is about families, and they were allowed to be, as you said, adopted. But it was a fundamental unit in which the laws applied to rather than the individuals.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's more communal,
yeah.
Wasn't it? Yeah. Which I haven't pointed out yet, but I think the strongest argument for infant baptism going way back to the beginning, and if not very, very early, was the cultural context of family rather than individualism. If baptism was crossing over and going through the waters to a whole new realm of existence, if you think of the cohesiveness of the ancient family, the thought of parents going through that water without carrying their infants through the water seems rather, I can't think of the word I want, unbelievable. Of course, all arguments for infant or adult baptism are based on what you already believe. I mean, we don't go to a Baptist and think, oh, we can just say what I just said, and they'll say, oh, I'm sorry, we've been wrong for centuries. But that, I think that's one of the strongest, and we have writings very, very early of church writers about the points to infant baptism. So, because the normal thing is that this was kind of an enculturation or something. So, okay, then, I'll tell a story. Once Karen and I were at the SeaTac airport, and you know how at SeaTac to go to the two outside, you go on the train. And so you're standing there, maybe hundreds of you, waiting for the train to come. Nervously, because it takes 4 minutes if you just missed. And then you see all the people coming off, and after they're off, you go in. So we were just a normal time of doing the standing. And then lo and behold, the doors opened, and there were about 60 or more, maybe, of nanny-type people, each with a Korean infant. And this is unusual. And so we didn't get on the train, at least not that one, because to see them going around and finding the parents that were waiting, and then see that first moment when they were holding this infant, I mean, I think we would have missed our plane if we hadn't said, we got to get going. And what a picture of, you know, the joy that we saw there and the picture of the joy spiritually of a baptism and how this is why the family of the church needs to be there, because this is our adoption ceremony. Anybody had a similar
We were able to do that with our friend, and then they had already asked us to be the godparents,
uh-huh.
And we went to the Minneapolis airport and saw them receive their baby, and then we got, you know, so the picture was even, like you said, beautiful.
Yeah. So it's a beautiful picture of baptism, isn't it? That, and remember, we need to remember always that baptism is for a call to serve, and not as a way to say we are the in people and they are the out people. And that it leads me to, I forgot to mention to write down the book that I mentioned the first session. It's called If Grace Is True, about God's love embracing all people. And it's written by two Quaker pastors. And it's and one thing, it has all the It has the verses of the Bible that kind of point to God's receiving of all people, and also from the church fathers and mother, if they're mostly fathers, but there must have been some mothers. The ancient first teachers of the church. So if you're interested in that, it's in your public library. And if it's not, I think you can request it anyway. So, okay, so this is adoption. Now, if we could just go into fast motion. Now, this movie is way back to the 60s. And back in the 60s and 70s, I used it so often. And the movie is called Baptism, Sacrament of Belonging. And it'll be interesting because there is no baptism in the film. It's a story that actually happened in a Franciscan orphanage in Mexico. And the main character is this little boy who has who was severely burned in a house fire. The only one in his family who lived through the fire, and is played by himself, which I think adds to the meaning of it. So, we're ready.
Is a journey of faith, a long journey from loneliness to having a home. This too is the story of a journey. It's the true story of Alfredo, a poor Mexican boy. Thank you. children were like brothers and sisters.
Dan, what was the name of that again?
It's called Baptism Sacrament of Belonging, and it's still available through the Franciscan Communications. Did you see any baptism images, even if there was no baptism? The more you see this, the more you see there's all of these. That would have been the sponsor. The sponsor.
Or it also reminded me of when in the service in the Lutheran Book of Worship, when the congregation speaks as a group to the new newly baptized, saying we welcome you.
I really like churches where the like in an infant baptism will carry the baby around and have everybody reach out and bless the child. Any other? Is it touching? Very touching. I've never had tears before reading a catalog. Anybody had it? But the new catalog for Franciscan Communications came, and I opened the cover. And then in the opening page, there was this picture of this accountant in Mexico City sitting at his desk with a white shirt and tie with a beautiful face. And then I read a little under, and this was Alfredo. And a plastic surgeon, is that what, there's a better word for it. Reconstructive surgeon had seen this film and gone and found Alfredo and brought him up to Los Angeles and completely rebuilt his face. So, which was an extra blessing from being in this movie, and then he played himself too in the movie. Did you notice the baptism robe at the party, at the fiesta? Like all the other children, he had his serape. And then what else? What else do you see in there? Just a joyful celebration of an adoption. And there were some other baptism things.
The father stooping to him when he first met him, and then automatically just enfolding him.
Yeah. Wasn't that, and then, and was it wisdom that he said that the children have to decide? Which asks us, do we have any limits on whom we will receive or desire to receive into the family?
It's not an infant baptism, but the request to be taken in is kind of the request to come into the community is more of an adult baptism kind of element. That was there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because there was an adult, he desired baptism, sought it, and then was received. Mm-hmm.
That boy that accepted Alfredo as his brother would always recognize him as his own, just as God recognizes us as his own after we're baptized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought of that, the special relationship between, and maybe it was one of the most popular kids in the school, which would be, could be either way.
But, it also moves from solitude, being alone, to being in a community.
Mm-hmm.
I really like that the boy stood out of the crowd to go and to welcome him. I mean, it wasn't just I'm saying this, but it was an action. Mm-hmm. Actually reaching out and pulling him in.
And like a sponsor, then that boy probably would take the responsibility to be with him, protect him.
I was wondering if he was, it happened really fast, but I wondered if he was the boy at the celebration who came over and stood by him. I was trying to catch if that was the same kid, but I wondered if he was
the celebration. And I think the fiesta celebration was a picture of the Eucharist.
I wondered if when he saw all the fireworks, if that brought any mind to him, or whether he was too young to understand that.
Yeah. Never thought of that.
Mm-hmm. My brother served in 2 theaters of war, and that was one of his fears when he hear a plane, hear someone slashing their feet.
Yeah. be like a post-traumatic.
Yeah.
Yeah, never thought of that. So, yeah.
But I think as a viewer, seeing those fireworks and knowing his history with fire, that said something about me.
Mm-hmm. So, well, sure, our invitation, I think, if this would be helpful in baptism instruction, and I think it's profound. And maybe we could bring Alfredo to hold him sometime. I'd like to move now from baptism as adoption to talk again about baptism as our identity. And certainly Alfredo had a new identity, didn't he? As one in this family and wearing the family serape and being welcomed into the family. But I want to just bring out this point for a few minutes and then almost, I guess, have this be kind of a last word. And that is in our American society, and I'm sure that in Canadian, of course, and this could be true around the world, but there are powerful forces that are teaching children in multiple ways what their identity is. And that would be a child should grow up and learn that his or her identity is being a shopper and a consumer. I just cringe when I walk into the supermarket and see these little baskets that say shopper in training. Because this just symbolizes for me what the whole commercial world is and how important then it becomes to children of what brands you have, and they know the brands, they know the different brands. And this becomes an identity, and I think it's spiritual death. How do we counter that with a baptismal identity? That my identity is that I, by grace, am a precious child of God through my baptism. So I'm going to first tell a story and then give some examples, and then we can talk about it. But the story was years ago, we went up to Acme, Washington, way up by the border, and we used to go up there with several other families for New Year's Eve. And during New Year's Day, the adults would be in the house in the kitchen making a picture puzzle or a jigsaw puzzle. And is there anyone here like me that just doesn't do that? A few. We're a minority, a suffering minority. But so I went into the living room with the children, which were all different ages, and to watch the movie. And when it started, it was A Little Princess, based on the story by Hodgkins?
Francis Hodgkins.
Yeah.
Burnett.
And also wrote the Garden. What was it?
The Secret Garden.
And this one, it's about Sarah, and of course the name Sarah means princess. And Sarah, in this movie, is very, very wealthy in England, where her father is called to the First World War, and she is shipped to New York City to this very exclusive private girls' school. And there she gets the best of everything, the best room. She wears the best clothes. She's popular. She grew up in India in the colonial times. and she knows the stories from India, and she gathers all the other girls around her to tell stories, and they love her, and everything is going so well until Miss Mitchkins, the headmaster or mistress of the school, calls her into her office. And Miss Mitchkins, it's kind of a melodrama. When she comes, you can hiss. coldly tells her her father has died in battle. They've discovered the family money has run out, so she can no longer go to the school. But Miss Mitchkins, out of the kindness of her heart, says she can stay as a servant girl, sent up to the cold attic with Sarah, an African-American little girl the same age, who's also a servant girl. And now she cleans the toilets, scrubs the floors, cleans up the pots and pans, all of that work, and she may not talk to any of her friends, the students, because she is now a different class. And so even Miss Mitchkins takes off and keeps the little locket she wears around that have a little picture of her mother and father. All of that. Well, up in the attic, very, very sad and very downhearted. She's crying, and then Betsy, the other servant girl, reminds her of a story she told her, and that is a story about her father. And the story was, if anybody ever tries to discredit you, do this. Just say to yourself, I am a princess. I am a princess. And she remembers that. She takes a piece of chalk that is there, and she draws a circle on this cold wooden floor, and she lies down in the circle. And there you can see on her face she is at peace. And you figure out that that circle really is a place where you go to say what her father told her to say. I am a princess. And she stands up from that circle, and I'm not going to tell the rest of the film or the story, but it's basically a story. What happens when Miss Mitchkins has to face a little girl who is a servant girl who believes she is a princess. It's a dramatic ending. So watching this movie with these children right after, well, when it was over, before they left, I just sat there saying, great baptism movie, great baptism movie. And they kind of went out with their eyes. Then I saw them out in the yard playing, and then the thought, it was very touching to me to look at them and say, most were girls. Will they have a circle? Will they have a circle when the magazines and the movies and the culture, especially with the girls, tell them what they have to be, what they have to wear, what they have to look like, what group they have to be in order to be a worthy person? Will they have a circle? And that's why I realized I'd said great baptism movie. Because that is our circle, and that includes us adults too. Because the culture out there, the world, has many, many voices telling us that we are inadequate, we are worthless if we don't do this or buy this. And then where do we go? We go back to the circle, and it's filled with water, and we reach into that circle, and we can put the water on our forehead again and say, I remember my baptism. I am a precious child of God, and that is my identity. The littlest girl that was at the party just graduated from high school, so I wrote this story and sent it to her for her graduation. And, so, what do you think?
It's a wonderful movie. My granddaughter must have watched it 100 times at our home. And she would often say, "Grandma, come cry with me." And now that she's
Grandma, come what?
Cry. Come cry with me, Grandma. And now that she's 16, she had given me a movie recently to watch, and she said it was one of the best movies she'd seen. And I called her, and I said, "Alicia, come cry with me." Because that was so much a part of our
But it reminds me this is both for children and adults, is an encouragement to resist purely religious movies, but rather, like in this movie, to see an authentic story and then say, ah, there's baptism, there's Jesus, there's new life.
And if indeed a child is a king, then you are a princess. It's a wonderful way to teach them.
You are a princess. Sir. Now, I'd like to just read some,
I have the DVD of that movie in the village, so it's possible we could arrange a time to show it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you want to be? Do you want to be in charge of that? I remember you are a precious child of God. I'm gonna list just some things that can be helpful to make this this concrete. Way back in the 80s when we lived at Holden, this idea was kind of catching on in the church, and that was this concern about helping children know in relation to the voices of culture where their identity is. And since that time, many things have happened. But one thing we did here up at Holden was to start those who were parents with little children here, and all of us with each other would be to start signing each other with the sign of the cross, and to just say, "Remember your baptism, you are a precious child of God." And then the word got out, and this was happening in other places. We didn't invent this. But what if parents, from the time their children are infants, actually sign them with the cross every day in some way and just say, "Remember your baptism, you are a precious child of God." Well, this was encouraged, and it's been years now, so the stories start coming back. I'll just mention them one very briefly. A mother from Minnesota who, before school, had four daughters, and they had to pass her before going to school to receive the sign of the cross. And then, so they did this morning after morning. And then one morning, the youngest came running back after the school bus had left. And then the mother saw the school bus stop down the street. And the little girl said, "Mother, you forgot." And she said, "What did you tell the bus driver?" "Just said that we forgot something so very important that I just couldn't go to school without it." And he was kind enough to stop, so she ran back to get her. And the oldest daughter, when she had her married and had her first child, it must have been before you were all in the room. When they were rolling her away to the delivery room, she says, "Mom, you forgot something." You know, and then the thought that this is now going to the next generation. A father who learned this and every night would kiss his children on the forehead, two cheeks, and chin, and never told them what it was. It just was, "I love you." And then somebody said, "Well, why do you do that?" And he said, And why don't you tell them? He says, someday they'll ask. And I was, then I can tell them that I kiss them every night, marking them with the cross of Jesus, who will love them forever. And another mother signed her children during prayers at night. And then oldest, when he got into junior high, just said, Mom, I'm grown up now. I don't want you to do that anymore. Okay, so then for several years she signed his bedroom door every night. And then when he was in high school at 16 or so, he came up and said, Mom, you can start it again. So not only for children, where I was speaking once, I noticed a woman who wasn't with her husband elderly, and she came up to me and said he had died since I had been there. But she's all excited. She wanted to tell me something. And she said the last thing he said before he died was, sign me the cross once more. And they had the practice of every night before they went to sleep to remind each other. A mother with a bipolar daughter who in her teenage years called on the phone and said she was going to commit suicide. And she, mother did everything to talk her out of it, and nothing was working. And then she just said to her daughter, put your finger on your forehead. And then there was this silence, and then the voice, Mom, I'm coming home. You know, it goes deep, doesn't it? Identity. Parents who always signed their children in the bathtub when they were growing up, and then had the biggest fluffy towel when they got out of the bathtub, would put it around their children and say, you are covered with the love of Jesus. And then in the church this is happening, where children gather around the font. On Whidbey Island, we built a new font that was only about this high, so children could reach into it. And how they love to do that, and they love to sign their parents, and before communion, they walk by, and they've taught the adults about signing. Well, we could go on and on, but I think it's just one little part of we need to do everything we can to help each other, and I need this to help each other know who we are and whose we are. Now, time is running, so I have, if we could have 3 minutes of lively conversation, and then I want to have a closing story then, that would just take a few minutes, so. Did anybody have any?
Well, I was just wondering that the lady that was then re-signing her son at age 16, had he grown tall? Did she have to stand on a chair?
I don't know, but that would be interesting. Or on a little step ladder.
I sign my children when they leave. They don't live near us, and so when they leave, I usually sign their car and.
Beautiful. Yeah. Any other thoughts? Have any of you had this practice in your homes or in your church? So, yeah.
Oh, in our home, I just sign my little boy every single night when I'm nursing him, or just if he's falling asleep, just sign his forehead and tell him he's a precious child. Mm-hmm. And it's because of being here before and Holden and hearing more about this and reading some stories similar to the ones you just told us that just made me realize how important that is. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, closing story. Did I forget anything here? No. This is... This is an experience that I had. My mother, when she was in her 80s, was diagnosed with a brain tumor. And she decided not to do any treatment with her. And when she had gone down, she was in a convalescent home, in a room with another woman. And how you could kind of track every day, it was like the opposite of an infant, losing something every day. And I remember we fed her every day, and my two brothers and I, we each took different two-week periods to just be with her all the time, which were precious moments. Also, in a large city, this was San Diego, in a large city convalescent place, so the more the families there, the better the care is. So that's what we did during the last days of her life. Once when I was with her, I heard out in the hall some of the workers there talking about me. And they didn't call me by name, they just called me one of the sons. And then there was also her roommate, who never learned my name, but always just called me one of the sons. So one day I get crabby about this. And this is what I wrote down, this is what I said to myself. Just one of the sons, that's all I am around this place. Don't they know that I'm a called and ordained minister in good standing in the ELCA? I'm a graduate of Pacific Lutheran University and Lutheran School of Theology at Chicago. And at graduation, I received a $200 scholarship as seed money for graduate school. It's still in the bank. Don't they know that I have faithfully served three congregations and one retreat center, and by many, I'm treated with great respect. And now I am a campus pastor at Pacific Lutheran University. No, all I am here is one of the sons. I took my mother's hand and held it, and all of a sudden I felt proud and happy and blessed. At Knollwood Convalescent Home, I was stripped of everything except what I was the first day of my life, her son. And I thought, all is taken away, and still I feel rich, and I feel blessed. And then I thought of the waters of baptism that she held me there. And to return to those waters is also to be stripped of every accomplishment, every honor, every success, every good work, and to just be one of the sons. So when I return to that water, all is taken away, and again I feel rich, and I feel blessed. And then God whispers to me, it is not what you gain, it is not whom you know, it is not what you have, but it's whose you are. You don't need points. Well, the last time to leave Knollwood Convalescent Hospital, I remember looking back and seeing that the sign by the door that said Knollwood Convalescent Hospital, and I decided to give it a new name. I called it Knollwood School of Theology. So with that, I leave you and thank you for these times together, to be at the water together. And once again, like we did the first day, if you like to walk by here, why don't I just sprinkle everybody? Maybe let's see, I'll go in here.
Remember your baptism, your precious child. Remember your baptism, your precious child. Remember your baptism, precious child.
All the rest, Dan.
Remember your baptism, your precious child. 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 Remember. Remember your camera. Remember your baptism, your precious child of God. Remember. Precious. And so did anybody get missed?
You.
Oh, good.
Times together.
Thank you.
Thank you.